Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When Apple released the iPad a year and a half ago, it seemed cute, maybe even a little unnecessary in a world full of great smartphones and great laptops. But it was different. And people who use it say they live the digital life differently now. They're creating and changing whole industries in their wake. Now it's Amazon's turn to jump in. It did last week with the Kindle Fire. It's a little smaller and a whole lot cheaper than the iPad, and once again, maybe driving lifestyle changes that end up changing our world. This hour on Point, iPad, Kindle Fire, and the path of tablet wars. You can join the conversation. Is Amazon's price tag calling to you? Do you see in your life, your industry, how tablets subtly or not so subtly change the world? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we'll get a preview of tomorrow's launch of Apple's new iPhone. But first, to the Kindle Fire. Saturday Night Live had a little fun with it. Here's Seth Meyers doing his weekend update routine and joking about the Kindle Fire, implying it just may not be that hip.
In an effort to compete with the iPad, Amazon Wednesday unveiled their new tablet computer called the Kindle Fire, which will retail for $199. It's expected to sell well among parents who always buy the wrong thing.
Okay, but $199? One guy very high on it was Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos last Wednesday introducing his company's new tablet at a press conference in New York. You'll notice he's bragging more about the content and the cloud computing, a little less about the actual device.
Kindle Fire, what do you get? It's 18 million songs, movies, TV shows, books, magazines, apps, and games. It's light, hold it with one hand. Fast dual-core processor, IPS display, wide viewing angle, beautiful and bright. All your content backed up for free in the cloud for you. Whisper Sync, now extended to movies and TV shows. And Amazon Silk, the cloud-accelerated web browser.
Jeff Bezos of Amazon, content, cloud, content. Joining us right now from Austin, Texas, is Omar Gayaga, technology culture writer for the Austin American Statesman, contributor to CNN.com and NPR's All Tech Considered. Omar, thanks very much for being with us. It's great to have you back.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Talk to us about this thing. I haven't seen one. I haven't touched one, but there's a lot of excitement about it. Just physically, in terms of features and physical presentation, how's it compare with the iPad?
Right. Well, the first thing you'd notice picking it up is that it's smaller. It's 7 inches as opposed to the iPad's 10 inches, and it weighs, I believe, about 14.6 ounces. So it's going to be a smaller form factor. It's actually similar to BlackBerry's PlayBook device, similar hardware.
Not half the weight of the iPad, but to two-thirds the weight or something like that.
No, the iPad 2 slimmed things down and lightened up quite a bit. One interesting thing about it, though, is it's got a lot less storage, a lot less internal memory than even the lowest-end iPad 2. It's only got 8 gigabytes of RAM, probably about 6 or 7 of it usable after the operating system. So you're not going to be storing tons and tons of movies or TV shows on it the way you might on one of the higher-end iPads.
But there's Jeff Bezos with Amazon saying cloud computing, so you don't need to store it. We'll store it for you.
Exactly. You'd think of this more as a streaming device. If you're going to be watching Amazon movies or listening to music, it's going to be stuff primarily that's stored on the cloud, although you'll have to be in Wi-Fi. It doesn't have 3G service included the way some of the iPad models do. So there's no 3G and no camera. So you're not going to be shooting any photos on this either.
Okay, so no 3G. So you can't use it like a telephone, I guess. On the other hand, that means no monthly 3G charge.
That's right. A lot of people prefer the iPad Wi-Fi anyway. They don't want to pay $25-$30 in monthly 3G charges. So this would be, I see it more as a kind of at-home streaming device. You're lying on the couch. You want something light that you can watch a movie on or listen to your music on. But there's no saying that future models of the Fire wouldn't be larger and or have 3G service on them as well.
So no camera, less memory, no 3G service. But if you want to cruise the web, you can certainly do that in a second. And Silk is the path to do that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting part of this. They developed their own browser called Silk that is actually going to be powered by Amazon's EC2 cloud services. So what it's going to do is, their theory is that their massive amounts of cloud computing power can download web pages much faster than your Wi-Fi connection even could. So they're going to do a lot of the downloading and back-end stuff and then shoot that information to your tablet, very similar to the way the Opera browser works. So their theory is that this would be much faster, although if Amazon's EC2 services ever go down, then you're kind of hosed as far as web browsing goes.
But at that level, Google must not like this. I mean, they just got Motorola and got Android, and it's kind of theirs. And here's Amazon, pretty big powerhouse, offering an alternate sort of face on your tablet.
Yeah, the operating system that this will run on is a modified version of Google's Android software. Bezos said that it's built on top of it. And then there was a lot of speculation as, you know, were they actually talking to Google? Was Google working with them on this? And it seems from what we're reading that there really wasn't a whole lot of collaboration on this with Google. They just sort of took the free operating system that Google offers and built on top of it. Now, whether they'll partner more on some of that stuff with Google later remains to be seen. But this seems like very much Amazon's deal. Amazon's product built around its own software, built on top of Google's Android.
So on Android, certainly not on the Apple system. We'll talk about what that may mean long term. I mean, I heard someone saying jokingly over the weekend, Omar, you know, the important features of the Kindle Fire, $199. And further features, $199. I mean, the only thing that really, truly matters here is that this is a very different price point. How does it compare to iPad pricing?
Well, the cheapest iPad is $499, and this Amazon Fire will be $199. So that's a big difference. You could actually buy an Amazon Fire and one of the lower end Kindle ebook readers if you wanted one for media streaming, one for ebooks, and still be $200 ahead as what you would be with the cheapest iPad. Now, what's interesting about that though is HP discontinued its own tablet earlier this summer, and at $99, when they kind of put it on fire sale, it sold really, really well. Mm-hmm. Even though this was a dead-end product that was being discontinued, everybody knew that this product had no future, and people were still willing to buy it because the price was $99. For $99, people will snap up a tablet no matter how dead in the water it might be.
So does this eventually boil down to Apple versus Amazon when it comes to tablets? And even though they're right now not competing head-to-head, they're not the same product, but the one's much cheaper, but does Amazon's Kindle Fire sort of drive out the other Android players who have been trying to get in here and make a stand?
I think we've seen tablet after tablet introduced and just not do as well as the iPad. The iPad accounts for, I believe, 3/4 of every tablet sale. So you just are seeing this sort of a cannon fodder going out there every month or two. You see a new tablet, it gets priced near the iPad and just fails. So obviously that strategy is just not working. No matter how capable the hardware is on these devices, if it's priced over $200 or $300, it's just not going to sell. So what Amazon is doing, I think, is very smart. They're introducing it at a price where people who might not be able to afford an iPad or say, I would never pay $500 to $700 on a tablet, but I'll pay $200 for something that's maybe not as capable. That seems like a very smart move. And I believe that the other big news is that they actually lowered the prices significantly on their Kindle ebook devices. There's one now for $79. There's a $99 touch version of it now. I think that's going to sell like gangbusters. So really, they're not just competing against the iPad. They're competing against the Barnes & Noble Nook with a color device close to the same price. They're competing with Netflix on streaming media. They're creating quite a bit of a media empire. So they're taking on not just Apple, not just Barnes & Noble, but also a lot of media companies.
Not to mention paper and ink and a whole lot of industries that have already been struggling with this competition, and now it gets fiercer. So part of it is Apple, Amazon. This cost could really drive this one at $199. People are saying that may be below cost. Now, this points to maybe the bigger framework here, but how can Amazon sell it for such a low price, maybe less than it cost it to make and deliver it?
Yeah, there's some speculation that they might be losing $10 to $50 on every device sold. But of course, their plan is to make it up on sales of TV shows, on sales of movies, sales of books that you're going to be reading on this device. Very similar to the video game model. When Sony introduced its PlayStation 3, it lost money on every console it sold, and they plan to make it up in accessories and game sales, online sales. So that's definitely the Kindle's, the razor blade strategy here.
When Apple came out with its iPad, and it's amazing to think it's just April of last year, and it sold 3 million of them in 80 days. It sold almost 15 million worldwide in the balance of last year, 2010, expected to, you know, do really big numbers again this year. What about this new one? Could Kindle Fire get up in that range, or is it a bigger market at a lower price point?
It could. I mean, it just depends on how much momentum the iPad still has, whether people will see that as a trade-off. I mean, I can pay $199 to get this device that's maybe not as capable, that doesn't do as many things as the iPad, but the price is right. I mean, I believe it's 29 million iPads have been sold since last year, which is
huge,
which is crazy. Yeah, and it's actually surpassed traditional PC sales, which was at 24 million for this year. So, definitely the iPad has been running the table. What I think Amazon has to do is show a compelling case for why not an iPad, why this? And I think what they're banking on is they've been very quietly building this very large media empire. They've been making the same kinds of music deals, the same kind of TV show deals and movie deals as Apple, but you don't hear about it as much. So kind of quietly, they've really built up a very, very strong collection. Where they have not built up as strong a collection is against Netflix, is in streaming movies and TV. That's something that's still kind of a work in progress. But I think they have to make a compelling case for this holiday season that this will do everything you need it to do. You maybe don't need all the apps that are on the iPad. You don't need a forward and rear-facing camera. I think they're going to appeal to people who maybe feel the iPad might be a little bit of overkill, and at least in terms of price. I'm not willing to pay $500, $600, $700 for an iPad, but for a Christmas gift for someone, $199 seems to be that sweet spot.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about computer tablet wars. Amazon has come out with its Kindle Fire, $199, and it's being positioned as kind of up against the iPad. Different capacities, as Omar Gayaga with the Austin American Statesman is telling us from Austin, Texas, but a very different price point as well, maybe pushing the tablet effect even deeper into the population. Omar Gayaga, please stand by there in Austin. Joining us right now from Stanford, California, is Farhad Manju, technology columnist for Fast Company, regular contributor to Slate and the New York Times, author of True Enough. Farhad, welcome back to On Point. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks. Good to be here.
People don't want to just hear about new product introductions, though there is curiosity here, but they're always interested in how it changes the world around it. Technology does that. What do you see with the introduction of Kindle Fire? What's being pushed here? What's the big picture, Farhad?
Well, I mean, as you guys were talking about earlier, I think that for Amazon, the big goal here is to get people to consume more media, more digital media, and more specifically, more digital media from Amazon. I mean, they noticed with their traditional Kindle that when people get a Kindle, they start buying a lot more books. They start buying a lot more Kindle books, many more than they would. They used to purchase hardcover and paperback books, and I think they're counting on the same sort of change in behavior here with movies, TV shows, and music. That when people get these devices, it'll be when you get a Kindle Fire, you'll have it with you all the time, and the only way to kind of get it to do stuff, to get it to play movies, to get it to play music and TV shows, is to get that stuff from Amazon. And I think that's what they're counting on here, that you'll sort of just start voraciously consuming media.
Of course, Amazon's voraciously selling many, many more types of products than you see up front on iPad. Just remind us, Farhad, with the iPad itself, the impact it has had on industries that it touches, magazines, music, you name it. I mean, what's the iPad effect already been in this last year and a half?
Right. I mean, as you were saying, it's crazy to think that it's just, a year and a half old, because what we've seen already is that most major magazine companies have come out with their own iPad editions. I mean, most newspapers are seeing the iPad as, many newspaper executives are hoping that the iPad will be the cornerstone of kind of this, the savior of their industry, that people will pay for iPad editions of newspapers. We're seeing it obviously have a huge effect on the games industry. People are playing games, casual games, apps on their iPhones. It's really sort of affecting all kinds of media industries, and changing the way those businesses operate. I mean, Amazon has seen big gains from the iPad. I mean, people read Kindle books mm-hmm. on on the iPad, and I think they just sort of want to get some part of that, you know, on their own device.
Omar, Apple has been famously pretty tough with publishers in deal-making around subscribers and who owns what and the information and how they divide up whatever gets paid on the iPad. Does Apple or does Amazon now create competition that may make old school publishers, you know, put them in a better place when they come into this tablet realm because they can play the two off against each other, Omar?
Yeah, publishers, app developers, they love this. They love that there's going to be another major competitor because all the tablets that we've seen have not that have been introduced against the iPad have not had that kind of media ecosystem behind them. They have not had a giant company with that kind of library of TV shows, movies, books behind it. They've just basically been hardware devices running Android. So really, Apple takes a 30% cut from app developers, and if you're profit margins are already slim. I mean, that cuts into them quite a bit. So yeah, publishers are very thrilled that there's going to be another major player and that might put Apple in a position of having to be a little bit more generous.
On the other hand, bookstores is just one more kind of assault on old-fashioned paper and ink publishing, Omar. I mean, now you've got Amazon with even a more aggressive reach out to consumers into their pockets to kind of own that reading relationship.
I believe so, but I think publishers have seen the writing on the wall for quite a while now, and I think they've been pleasantly surprised by the adoption of the traditional Kindle and how people are going back to reading books from that. I mean, I believe ebook sales have been up, even audiobooks have been up like something like 80% over the last year. It's just been kind of a resurgence in reading material, and as more stuff becomes available on the Kindle and the iPad and these other devices, I think you're actually seeing more reading, which the publishers have to be liking.
Omar Gayaga and Farhad Manju are with us. We're looking at the new Amazon Kindle Fire and Apple's iPad and all the rest and what unfolds here. Let's go to our listeners. Prince George, Virginia, Sabine is calling. Hi, Sabine. You're on the air.
Hi. This is a great opportunity for people like me who have been on the fence because of the price of the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get that Kindle Fire. My husband has the Kindle 3G and absolutely loved it, and I've used it, and it's great, but I would like something that I can play games on as well as read and stuff.
And Sabine, how do you picture yourself using it? So you'll play games. Will you play them in different places? What else will you do with it? I mean, imagine it's in your pocket. What will you do with it?
This will be the great thing to have when I'm sitting in a waiting room, when I'm, you know, at the doctor's office or what. All those opportunities where you're just sitting bored because I'm ADHD and I need some distraction.
what about shopping, Sabine? Are you going to be, you know, clicking on all the stuff Amazon sells, and they sell just about everything? You're going to be ordering your groceries out of your pocket?
I am an avid Amazonian. Yes, I do that with my laptop computer, but with the tablet, it's going to be easier even and. You know, more fun.
Sabine, I really appreciate your call. Farhad, what about shopping habits? Do you think Amazon can count on this to pull people even deeper, more deeply into the realm of shopping online? They're promising for buyers what you get a free month of Apple Premium, which is this two-day delivery on everything you buy. Is this a play for a bigger piece of the retail pie?
Yeah, so you're talking about the Amazon Prime service, which is the $79, but you get a little taste of it with these devices. And, Amazon really counts on that service, Amazon Prime, to kind of get people to buy stuff. I mean, I was reading some statistics that, you know, in the year before people subscribe to Amazon Prime, they buy about, you know, on average, someone will buy $400 of stuff from Amazon. But if you subscribe to it, mm-hmm. you suddenly buy $900 worth of stuff from Amazon.
Because everything shows up in 2 days. It's click and it's almost there.
Right. And there's no, you don't have to worry about kind of the friction of shipping costs. So it just sort of seems the first time you think of something you want to buy, you just go to Amazon and you buy it. And if you have this, if you have this tablet with you everywhere, you'll be thinking of buying stuff wherever you are, and then just buy it. I think that is, you know, one of the main drivers of increased purchasing on Amazon, and they're counting on these devices to kind of make that even better.
I mean, Omar, I know so much of this goes on already, but if Kindle Fire just makes it that much easier, this looks like yet another sort of whack on brick and mortar retailers. Amazon's been doing, you know, firehouse sales, and even Walmart's been having trouble. But if people are carrying one of these things and price shopping and ordering right there out of their pocket, more headwind for brick and mortar, Omar?
Yeah, it actually, well, what happens is Amazon has the ability to bundle stuff together. You know, say you buy this season of this TV show, get the T-shirt for 30% off. They can kind of tie in stuff from their retail store to things that you might buy that's digital media. The other element to this, we talked about earlier, the Silk browser. They're going to have information about where you're browsing, where you're shopping. They're going to be the intermediary between you and the internet. So they're saying they're only going to hold on to personal information for 30 days. But in that, you know, they can draw quite a bit of information to their recommendation engine from what you're browsing, where you're shopping, what you're buying, what you decide to buy. And with that kind of information, it makes them even more powerful in recommending things that you might want to buy.
A little sliver of a machine, Kindle Fire Gizmo, and you've got leverage over whole huge industries and even ways of life. Joel in Nashville, Tennessee. Joel, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I work for a video company, and we use the iPad to control multiple devices from one location instead of having to walk around and, you know, lay our hands directly on whatever device we want to control at the moment. And,
yeah.
It makes things very convenient. Also, I've downloaded all the PDFs for every manual on all the pieces of the gear that I use. And so if there's a problem or if I need to, you know, find something out, it's all right there. I don't have to thumb through, you know, a paper manual and try to find it that way. I just type in whatever I want to find out, and it comes up very easily.
So, Joel, so you really are using this in a way that even a laptop wouldn't have worked for you. The iPad's changed your workflow.
Absolutely. Makes things much easier.
What about Kindle Fire? Are you looking at it, or this is for work, so maybe money doesn't matter as much? You stick with the Apple iPad line. How do you think about that?
Well, they would have preferred to save the money if it was, you know, going to be $200 or so dollars cheaper. I can definitely see the Kindle Fire taking a strong hold if app developers, you know, can do these kinds of things. Also, I'd like to add that I don't think that the 3G capability is such a huge selling point because there are so many Wi-Fi hotspots everywhere, you know, all over the country, and you can hop on the internet easily.
Yeah, Joel, true as can be. I appreciate your call. Let's get one more right here from Kansas City. Hikaru's calling from Kansas City. Hikaru, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Pretty well. What do you think?
Well, one of the things that hasn't been missed or hasn't been mentioned is the core browsing metric. Normal web browsers, you have a cookie that they track where you go and they can build a profile and sell that information.
Right.
With this new tablet, everything you do goes through Amazon's, and they know your tablet. So there's no way to anonymize what page you go to, what you click on, when you're shopping, what items you're browsing for, what you put in your shopping cart. That's huge. They can sell that for a lot of money, and that's how they're paying for this.
It also means, I guess a lot less. You're saying less anonymity, Hikaru.
Zero anonymity as far as Amazon's concerned.
Let us look at that. I appreciate your call from Kansas City. Farhad, what about the anonymity question here? First, the value of what they know. Is it as different as Hikaru describes from just the cookies that get dropped on our home PCs? And what about the value of that? What about the privacy and anonymity issues?
Well, as Omar said, I think they've said that they're going to keep this information for 30 days. And I believe there's a way on the Fire to turn off this cloud browsing service. I think you might get slower browsing speeds or some other effects of that. But I think there's an opt-out feature. But in general, I think the caller's right. I mean, this is going to give them a great deal of information about how you're browsing. And even if they don't keep that information on each person for a long time, they can get that aggregate information, you know, a huge class of users and power their recommendations engine, serve up ads potentially, do all kinds of things, you know, change the nature of the products they keep in the store, the products they recommend to you, do all kinds of things that I think could be really interesting and really profitable for them. And in general, this is the major change between the PC and between these personal devices. Mm. Each of these tablets is going to be tied to a single user. I mean, people don't really share Kindles. You can, mm-hmm. but it's awkward. Mm-hmm. And so with each of these devices, I think they can target a specific user rather than kind of, you know, several people who may use a household computer.
So even if they're rolling the data out every 30 days, and it'll be interesting to see what the details are on that, they're going to get to know a lot about you, the individual user right there. I appreciate the Kansas City call. We're talking about tablet wars, the Kindle Fire, iPad, and how they change the world around us, industries around us. Steve is calling from West Haven, Connecticut. Steve, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hello, Tom, and hello, guests. I have a question, and I'll get off the air for the answer. Is if I could compare this to television, you know, way back in the late 50s, early 60s, we had basically three networks, CBS, ABC. So now we have Google and Apple and I don't know who else. There's a couple others in there. Are we going to, back in the 50s and 60s, we just needed one television set. Are we going to need three little pads now, to one for Google and one for Apple and, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's a great question because they've each got content attached to them, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll get off the air, and thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Omar, how about it? I mean, you know, they've got overlapping content, but they've each got content that they're particularly sitting on top of. So are you going to have to own a gizmo from each to have the perfectly fluid access to the content that's in its home base?
It might even be two from the same company. When Jeff Bezos was asked about that, about the e-book reading experience and whether you lose that on the Fire, he said, no, we think people will buy both. We think people will buy a Fire and a traditional Kindle. Good for those guys. So, but if you're, you know, if you think about what's going on with Netflix and Hulu and all of the kind of streaming video stuff, you can't get everything from any one of those services. You can't get everything on iTunes. You can't get everything on Netflix. A lot of people combine those services. They might buy some things on iTunes that they can't get on Netflix. They might buy certain things on video on demand through a cable operator that they can't get from the streaming services. Really, we're not at a point where any one of these devices can do everything. So you do have people buying multiple devices, or I'll do some of this on my laptop but do the rest of it on my iPad. I mean, yeah, we're not quite there where there's a do-all one kind of device, although Apple has come probably the closest with the iPad.
Farhad, do you think we'll ever get there, that kind of convergence around one device? Or, you know, these days it seems with Amazon's deal, if you don't own content, how do the other Android tablet makers compete with it? Is everybody going to want to keep their sort of private reservation of content that they have unique access to?
Yeah, I mean, it seems I don't think we'll ever get there, because one of the things that's happening is that, you know, people are choosing different devices for sort of different modes of use, right? So I think for some people it makes sense to have a tablet and an iPhone and a smartphone of some sort and, you know, a laptop. For other people it might make sense to just have one of these devices. And I think hopefully we'll get to a place where one of these devices will run most apps and play most content, but it seems that the way these deals happen, you're not going to get you're not going to get everything on one of these devices, and that kind of, you know, it works to the benefit of these companies. It keeps opportunities for you to buy new stuff and for you to switch over to other places. I think that the media companies also don't want to give one player too much power. I mean, the music companies kind of regretted letting Apple take over the music business, and I think that, you know, the other media companies want to sort of spread it around to different hardware makers.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about computer tablet wars. First, Apple's iPad. Now, Amazon's Kindle Fire, out with a whole lot of new functionality. Not the same as the iPad, but a much lower price point. And these little devices are changing lots of industries, and by that, around that, beyond that, lives as well. Omar Gayaga is with us from Austin, Texas, with the American Statesman there. And from Stanford, California, we're joined by Farhad Manju, technology columnist for Fast Company. He writes for Slate and the New York Times as well. With us right now from Raleigh, North Carolina, is Ruth Seeley. She's contributor to the blog Geek Mom and senior editor at opensource.com. Ruth, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
We wanted to ask you just about lifestyle angle on this. I mean, I know you're looking at many angles of this, but what's your experience with the tablet and how it kind of insinuates the computer into more angles of life than certainly a PC, even a laptop, Ruth?
Well, device manufacturers have recognized for quite a while now that most people are doing just a few really simple things with their computers, browsing the web, checking email, watching videos, and they keep trying to answer that with simplified computers. You remember e-machines, and then that was the idea behind netbooks.
Yep.
But tablets are really a legitimately, potentially successful answer to that need. It's so much smaller, it's so much more portable, it can go everywhere and do all those things, plus more.
So give us the anthropological view. Does it matter a lot or a little that it's smaller? You know, okay, you can curl up in bed with it. You can have it on the couch. You can have it at the soccer field. Is that a big deal for lives? Is it a big deal for industries?
Yes, in two different ways, and then no, in a sense. So in our house, as you said, I blog for geekmom.com, mm-hmm. and the first half of that word is geek. So in our house, laptops and desktops clearly still have a place, which means tablets have to fill some other role. For people who simply want to do that, browsing the web and checking email, then the tablet really just takes the place of all of that. But, you know, we still have a Linux server running our family website and a desktop machine running an embroidery machine. A tablet can't do those things yet. But as far as the average family household, where you want to do is read your notes for a meeting and then let the kids play Angry Birds, the tablet takes care of all of that, all in one day.
And do you find yourself online more often because you've got it there swinging in your coat pocket?
So my tablet, as Omar mentioned earlier in the show, mm-hmm. I have one of those touchpads that went on fire sale after HP discontinued them 7 weeks past launch.
The savvy shopper.
I do. So I have a $149 touchpad that originally retailed for, I think, $600. It is not 7 inches. It's not fitting in my pocket.
Okay.
And actually, one of the comments I made on Geek Mom with the fire was they say that the new small Kindles will fit in your pocket. They do not have mom pockets. Mom pockets do not hold anything that is 6 or 7 inches.
Maybe wearing when you've got the raincoat on. Do you think that Kindle Fire will catch on at this price and this 7-inch size as opposed to the bigger thing?
I do think the price is hugely important, and the touchpad proved that. But what I think the Fire is going to be is not a tablet replacement device. You know, it's not going to be what you buy instead of the iPad or instead of an Android tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Amazon's website and the things they've said around the Fire, they've only in one place that I've seen, and that's the title bar of the Fire's website, do they call it a tablet. Nowhere else do they ever use the word tablet to refer to the Fire. So it doesn't use the tablet-specific Honeycomb version of Android. It uses mm-hmm. Android 2.3 as its base. It doesn't have the camera. It's only got 8 gig of storage. It's really a consumption device. It's for reading those books and watching the movies, and that's about it. It's not being marketed as a creation device the way the iPad was. Once you see that how it fits into your life that way and what you can get in the Amazon App Store, the Amazon App Store has a lot of stuff, but it launched only a few months ago with 3,800 apps.
Right.
In contrast, the Amazon market, which you can't get to with the Fire, has hundreds of thousands of apps.
What, you mean the Apple App Store?
No, I mean the Google Android market.
Oh, I see, like the full thing. Okay.
Yeah, so you can't get to the Google Android market with a Fire.
Huh.
You can only get to the Amazon App Store.
Right.
So you're only going to get this tiny several thousand number of apps versus the hundreds of thousands of Android apps that are really available.
So Geek Mom, is that a turnoff to you?
So if I didn't have a Kindle and a tablet, which I do, I have both of those things, mm-hmm. I would probably look harder at the Fire simply because of that price point. But because I do have a tablet that's significantly more powerful and has more storage, and I do have a Kindle, and I really love the e-ink on the old Kindles. It's so easy
mm-hmm.
to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the eternally free 3G access on there, which one of the callers said he thought it wasn't a big deal. It's a huge deal when your smartphone battery dies after 8 hours
yes.
or when you're
yes.
in a subway in Paris and can't get online.
Yeah.
That 3G that works around the world is great for a quick email or Twitter check.
Well,
so the Kindle's awesome.
We've got an avalanche of devices here. Let's get our callers in Norfolk, Virginia. Jamie, thanks for calling, Jamie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for allowing me to comment.
Sure.
I am the person that I think the iPad was really invented for. I hate to use the label here, but I am legally blind. I have less than 10% vision.
Okay.
The computer age has just passed me by. I'm fitting into this very weird niche. And I got an iPad kind of kicking and screaming, and now I don't know how I could live without it.
What, you mean if you turn the contrast up and hold it close enough to your eyes, can you read and use the iPad?
That's precisely it. And the strange and sad thing is I have one of the most wonderful Apple laptop, Apple desktop computer. It's either a 21 or a 23 inch screen. I'm not sure which, but we bought big and gorgeous, thinking it would work.
Yeah.
It didn't. But this little device has connected me to the world in a way that I can't believe I ever lived without it. I facetiously say I'm part of the 20th century. I'm not hip enough to be part of the 21st because I'm not computer savvy.
So what do you use it for? That iPad that you're holding right up close to zip right past that legal blindness, what do you use it for, Jamie?
It helps me cope. If I go to a restaurant, I can't read menus. If it's posted on a board, I can't read it, but I can go ahead.
Yeah.
If I know where I'm going ahead of time, I can check. So I don't draw a lot of attention to myself, which is rather silly, I realize, vain, really. But, okay, I'm running a dog therapy organization. I help with that. And if I had not had this device, I would not be able to do this.
Always another way. Jamie, our time's growing short here, but I love to hear how that's working for you in such a liberating way. That is really cool, and I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Troy in Jamaica, Vermont. Troy, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I actually recently purchased an iPad 2, and I sort of hemmed and hawed about the $600 price tag.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have two 30-something-year-old siblings with children in junior high and a father who's a retired 72-year-old engineer who kind of skipped the computer, you know, the computer wave. But the iPad 2 does something that I think that the Kindle may never do. It sort of justifies all of our iPhones and iPod, you know, iPod touches and all these $200, $300, $400 pieces of equipment that, you know, we might have thought were MP3 players or gamers, but during, you know, the Hurricane Irene shenanigans, that was the way we all got together. It sort of justified our iPhones and our iTouches, and, you know, we never jumped on the computer at home and tried to check in. We were using the iPad and, you know, what was in our pockets. And so now, you know, my father, 4 weeks down the road, is, contemplating getting one. He's also found it simpler to check emails and recently joined Facebook. And it sort of just makes everything work that, you know, our family collectively has spent, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars on. And frankly, the laptops are getting dusty.
You're right. And you're
you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course I do. We've seen it. And you're driving the new economy with that. Nothing like a hurricane to make you look for a real mobile device. Farhad Manju, what do you see here? Do we end up with a bigger, more flexible, smaller in the pocket pie of devices? Is that just where it's going, and that sort of digital life becomes something that people on the grand scale become accustomed to having with them all the time?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely seems to be the case. The pie is growing, and the pie is growing toward these devices, you know, phones, tablets, devices that you have with you all the time. I mean, if you think about it, we spend a lot of our time, most people, at computers during the workday. The rest of the time was a time when we weren't using machines, and now these device makers are trying to sell you that time, trying to get devices that you'll use when you're sleeping, when you should be sleeping, when you're walking, when you're on the bus, everywhere else.
So what the ownership, the claim on the stake on our lives, Omar Gaaga, just grows here. I guess at $199, you bring in a whole new batch. They're talking about potentially millions of sales just in the balance of this year, Omar.
Yeah, I think some. I saw one estimate online that they've already pre-sold 100,000 of them. Pre-sales have already started, and that the actual Fire comes out, I believe, November 15th is the launch date. The iPad started off really strong out of the gate too, but I think one thing we need to keep in mind with the Fire is it's going to evolve. When the iPad came out, it was thought of as more of a consumption device as well, and it evolved into something very, very different. So I think the Fire will also develop and evolve over the next year.
Ruth Seeley, maybe the expectation just becomes whenever you're in touch with anyone, wherever, they're plugged in.
Absolutely.
Well, There's more than our future. There's the right now. Ruth Seeley with Geek Mom and OpenSource.com with us today from Raleigh, North Carolina. Ruth, thanks so much for a few minutes of your time.
Thank you.
Farhad Manju at Fast Company. Thanks, Farhad.
Thanks a lot.
And Omar Gaaga, the great in Austin, Texas, with us from the Austin American Statesman. CNN.com and NPR's All Tech Considered. Omar, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
In a moment, Apple launches its new iPhone line tomorrow. This is On Point. Apple's new CEO Tim Cook is scheduled to launch a new iPhone, or maybe a couple of new iPhones, in Cupertino, California tomorrow. Joining me now from New York with more on tomorrow's launch is Sasha Segan, lead analyst for mobile devices at PC Magazine. Sasha, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So I don't know what Apple's going to call it, but a lot of people are saying this is iPhone 5. What's coming, Sasha?
Well, one of the great things about Apple announcements and why they're so much fun is that Apple manages to maintain a sense of mystery around these things. So no one is 100% sure of what's coming. It could be one iPhone. It could be two iPhones. It could be a brand new iPhone 5. It could be an iPhone 4S, which is a sped up, slightly improved version of the existing iPhone 4. All these rumors are out there. Some of them contradict each other, and we'll see tomorrow afternoon.
So if it's an iPhone 5, and a lot of people are expecting something like that, whatever it may be called, what's the evolutionary path suggest might be coming? We know you don't have the details, but what have people been looking forward to in sort of the next round?
Well, we're definitely looking at a faster processor, probably the processor that's currently used in the iPad 2. We're possibly looking at a slightly larger screen, maybe a different case design with a metal back instead of a glass back this time. We're looking at it running at faster internet speeds on AT&T's network, but not on Verizon's. It'll be out on Verizon and Sprint, but it'll probably be slower on those networks. And we're looking at some really interesting new software from a company Apple bought called Siri, which has this sort of artificial intelligence voice recognition thing that's really quite amazing.
What about penetration of iPhones at this point? You know, how big a chunk of the smartphone market, and how big are smartphones out of all the cell phones out there?
Well, we passed the point where more than 50% of mobile phones sold in the U.S. are smartphones this year. So now the majority of phones sold are smartphones. The majority of phones in people's hands still aren't smartphones because a lot of people are still holding on to their older phones. But we've gone over that hump where most people are now buying smartphones. Apple is the second most popular platform after Android, but the iPhone is the single most popular phone because there are so many different Android phones splitting up that market share.
And how does it work? Do people do you have to buy up to trade up in terms of features? Can you use your old iPhone and sort of somehow download the new stuff, or you actually have to go and get, if it's an iPhone 5, you've got to get one?
One of the brilliant changes that Apple brought to the marketplace a few years ago was this idea that you could easily upgrade an older phone. And generally what Apple does is they let a lot of the new features come to devices that are a year or two old. So many of the new software features, like this Siri artificial intelligence voice recognition thing that we're still figuring out,
yep,
will probably be available on existing iPhone 4s as a free download. Apple really sees their phones as a software platform, not as just a black box which does what it does when you buy it.
Sasha, tell us more about the voice recognition software here, Siri, with some AI, artificial intelligence attached. What kind of capacity and what kind of functionality?
Well, the idea is that this software can understand natural language requests on common topics. For instance, you could, in theory, press a button on your iPhone and say, show me movies near me that are dramas and got great reviews. And it would be able to filter and give you back only that relevant information. Or make a dinner reservation at 7 p.m. with Abby at a Turkish restaurant near here and enter that into my calendar. So, and it would do all of those things. So it's a step forward for voice recognition. It's a step forward for search. We're not 100% sure that it's going to come in exactly that form, but this is what a lot of people are anticipating.
And with that, a lot of old-fashioned thumb typing, going the way of the dodo bird. You don't have to sit there and type all that in. Just talk to your phone, and it takes care of business.
Absolutely. Face it, the experience of typing on a touch screen has never been great. It never will be great. So anything that these companies can do to make you need to type less is going to be something that people really appreciate. And we've seen Microsoft working very aggressively on good voice recognition in their new version of Windows Phone as well. This is something they're all thinking about.
What are you expecting in terms of product rollout in this post-Steve Jobs era? The new CEO, Tim Cook, will do it? Does it have? Can it have the same magic?
I think Tim Cook's magic is different. From what I've seen of Tim Cook, he's less of a showman and more of a let's get down to business, here's what we're going to do kind of guy. He's more about effectiveness and less about glitter and sparkle. But that said, the Apple brand has enough glitter and sparkle right now. I think a direct, effective presentation would be just as good.
Sasha Segan with PC Magazine, covering mobile devices there. Sasha, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Apple coming out with what may be an iPhone 5 tomorrow. We'll see what they call it. Tim Cook, new CEO, at the helm there. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Hit the like button there. You'll get the early word on upcoming shows. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Alex Kingsbury, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell. With help from John McConnell and Sarah Moad, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.